Doom do 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 do. Hi, plant people. Welcome to episode 8 of
Bloom and Grow Radio.
By day, Toronto-based Daryl Chang is a business analyst for a tech company. And by night, he is the creator of the incredibly popular blog and Instagram account, Houseplant Journal. Daryl's commitment to excellence and his passion for plants and thirst for knowledge has turned him into the king of the internet houseplant world. That's what I like to call him. What was initially a hobby Tumblr page has turned into an Instagram account with over 200,000 followers, a go-to blog for anything plant-related, the beginnings of his very own houseplant care book, and plant time-lapse videos that have gone viral around the world. If you pay any attention to his Instagram account, you'll know that he is always conducting different experiments, trying new houseplant care methods, and answering the many questions his followers are always posting in his comments section. His brain is literally overflowing with plant knowledge, and he has graciously spent time with me to share all that amazing knowledge with you today. Get ready, my plant people. This is one of the longest episodes yet on Bloom and Grow Radio. We cover a huge variety of topics, have deep thoughts about our plant friends, a little dirty talk, and learn some secrets behind his collection. And if you stay tuned through the end of the show, Daryl is going to give us a sneak peek of another talent and passion of his that is equally as impressive as his houseplant collection. But you'll only find out if you stay tuned. I think that's enough of a teaser. Let's get on to our plant chat with Daryl from Houseplant Journal. Hi, Daryl. Thank you so much for being on the show today.
Hi, Maria. Good to see you.
Yay.
Or hear you.
So let's just dive right in. I want to start, you know, of course, the most basic of questions, but how did your collection come to be what it is now? You know, where did you start?
I think, like a lot of people around our age, I'm waiting for my condo to finish building. It hasn't finished yet.
Okay.
And so I'm living at my parents' place. And they, or at least my mom, you know, she taught me everything about outdoor gardening. And we always loved gardening together.
Mm-hmm.
And then in our current house, you know, we have nice skylights, as I'm sure many people have seen on Instagram.
I know.
And so she was like, oh, why don't we decorate inside with some plants? And then she's also said, oh, but I'm terrible with indoor plants, so you'll have to figure it out. And so, I mean, I'm a really like hobby oriented kind of guy. So, I mean, I love playing music. I love photography. And so naturally, as I delved into houseplants, I also, you know, wanted to do as much research as I could and kind of, you know, went crazy with it, as most houseplant people do. You know, they have their jungles, right?
Mm-hmm. 0 to 60. That's
exactly.
A lot of people's journeys.
Yeah. And so, I mean, what I came to notice was that as I read the information online, I felt it was very, very fragmented. Everything seemed like the care was only specific to this plant. And then if you tried another plant, you have to, look up its care advice. And it felt very, you know, very fragmented, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's when I just decided, okay, I'll start documenting my progress on Houseplant Journal, which originally started on Tumblr probably 5 years ago now. But, you know, I felt like Tumblr was a very, very easy way to, you know, click a photo and then write some captions. And at the time, Tumblr was even a little bit better than Instagram because it was able to, you know, like you could do like micro blog posts with like several images together. So,
oh, cool. And that's only a recent Instagram feature.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So for example, I would take usually a set of three photos, each showing some kind of step that I was doing. Let's say it was repotting or something like that. It would be like a before, a during, and an after, something like that. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so on Tumblr, it was pretty easy to do that. And so I just documented it there. Most of the pictures are taken with my cell phone, as most pictures are taken now these days. And it kind of took off from there, because later when I started having some like nicer photos that I figured could be good as like individual ones, then I went to Instagram. And
I kind of love how your collection has progressed, your like media presence has progressed from like a hobby Tumblr account to this like insane Instagram account with like hundreds of thousands of followers, and then a blog, and then a YouTube channel. Like, you're just constantly evolving and constantly trying to like help your audience in whatever way is possible.
When I first documented it, it was literally my houseplant journal. I just journaled as I went along with whatever plants I had, right? Mm. And so way back then, I thought, you know, someday I got to put these into a nice little picture book or something, because, you know, I actually have the documentation of my plants. It makes it sound so formalized, but, you know, the documentation of some of my plants that I've owned for the whole 5-6 years that I've been starting this hobby, right? And that to me is something that is really, it gives it a sense of authenticity, you know, like that you can actually have a plant for this long. And there are some plants that have died along the way, and I took a picture of them before I had to discard them. And it was, it was sad, but at the same time, again, it's the authentic experience of, you know, there's just some plants that won't stay looking nice forever. There's some plants that will be susceptible to pests and that you don't want to deal with anymore. So you just have to, you know, part ways.
I think that's so important to think about when, especially for people who are getting started. You know, people can get so disheartened when a plant dies. And if one or two plants die, and maybe you got two plants that need very different care and you cared for them both, you know, in an incorrect way, and all of a sudden you label yourself a plant killer, or, you know, I labeled myself succulent killer for so long, where I just didn't know how to take care of them. I just needed to do some more research, you know? But I think it's like part of life. And even you, someone who has this incredible collection, to be able to kind of acknowledge, yeah, I lose plants too sometimes. That's the circle of life. That's plants live and die like human beings, like pets, like all, you know, it's not, everything doesn't have to look as perfect as that Instagram picture, you know?
Yeah, actually, I really like that you mentioned pets, because, so, you know, when we buy, let's say, a picture that we hang on the wall, once we hang it there and, you know, we walk by, we enjoy it just on a very surface level, like, oh, I look at this picture and it's nice, right? And that's the core, right? But when you, you know, adopt a puppy, the puppy is cute, you play with it, but then you also have to learn to take care of its needs that are not so glamorous, like picking up after it and teaching it where to go to the washroom, right?
And totally.
So, but as the puppy grows, it becomes like a little adolescent type dog and then fully grown adult. And, you know, you don't really, I mean, you miss the puppy, but at the same time, while you interact with the dog, once it's fully grown, it's like your relationship changes, right?
Totally. You have a personal relationship with it.
Exactly. So why is it that a plant that comes out of a nursery, which is essentially like a young plant that's grown right to the point where it's perfect to sell, because we quote unquote say that it looks perfect at this point, then we buy it. But then after, as it grows, as it loses its older leaves, like even the moment one of its older leaves yellow, we're immediately sort of saying, oh my God, what am I doing wrong? Right. Mm-hmm. And so it's like we have a different mentality with plants, even though both plants and dogs are living things.
Right. But also your pets get sick and you take them to the vet and mm-hmm. you get better. You know, you don't just throw your pet out. And mm-hmm. I think that's also similar with plants. If people see one yellow leaf, they're like, oh, I killed it. But a lot of the times you're just like, oh, it's talking to me and I need to figure out what it's saying and I need to learn how to better care for it. And that is exactly, like such a personal relationship. We just got deep real quick.
I would forewarn you that right now my mind is like completely entrenched in the things that I'm writing for the book. And so if all of a sudden I go into some really deep thought, then it's because the thoughts are in my head right now swimming around.
Oh my gosh. And I welcome them. That is what Bloom and Grow Radio is all about.
Okay, great.
Yeah. So we can go as deep as you want. And I think one thing I did want to bring up, I mean, you're talking about caring for a plant and having a relationship and a long-term relationship with a plant. I mean, your Monstera is like Instagram famous in the plant community for sure. And it is cool that you had that Tumblr account where you saw, you know, it in its infancy. And now it's this, I mean, it's a monster. It's enormous, as big as you are. Yeah. We'll have a picture of it in the blog that's associated with this podcast episode for the listeners to be able to see. Mm-hmm. But do you want to talk about maybe your journey with that plant and maybe any other of your favorite plants that you've cared for?
Sure. So yes, the Monstera, I would imagine, yes, that is probably one of the most viewed on Instagram mm-hmm. throughout the years that I've been posting it. So that plant, I just surfing our kind of classified ads, we call Kijiji over here. And I just saw this picture of a kind of leggy looking Monstera, and it was for $10. So I said, oh, yeah, sure, I'll go pick it up. And lo and behold, I get there, and the pot, which it's currently still in the same pot, is like a very big plastic 16-inch pot. And so you'll actually, if you include the link to my blog post about the Monstera, the very first picture is the picture that I took of it the moment
right,
I bought
the car,
it from the person.
Right?
It's like on the, it's on my car,
you're right?
On the hood of my car, and it's like it's this very big, kind of awkward looking plant, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, when I brought it home, you know, sometimes it takes a special kind of person to love a funny looking plant or a very awkward looking one.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, my mom wasn't too pleased with it. She was like, this doesn't really look very nice, right? And so I tried to like trellis it up to a small, like those dollar store bamboo trellises. And I mean, it held up because the plant was small. But the first thing I really loved about the plant was, or I'm sure everyone else does too, is the patterned leaves. How, you know, even though at the time I only had about a dozen leaves or so, I noticed that like each one had a kind of different pattern, right?
Like little snowflakes.
Exactly, yeah. So, I mean, that was something that I loved about the plant right off the start. And then because of the size of it and knowing that it would grow much bigger and that maybe also my unwillingness to prune it back, my mom suggested, why don't you take it to your church where we have like, so we had this kind of side building to our church, and it's got the Sunday school rooms, and you know, they kind of wanted to have some plants there. So I was like, okay, here, this is a nice big one we can put in the corner. But you know, for me, the light positioning is absolutely the most critical thing for making plants grow nicely, right?
Mm-hmm.
So like, I mean, I will go off on a little tangent here and say that all advice about watering, it must be taken in the context of whatever light was suggested in, let's say, the previous bullet point of care or something, right? Because the usage of water and is completely linked to the intensity of light that a plant receives.
Right.
And so anyway, placing my Monstera at the church, in that room, there's a, well, it's also visible in the pictures, but there's a door, like a French door with the glass all throughout the entire length of the door, which faces west. And then behind it is a very big window that faces north. So there's, you know, a good two side of light coming onto the Monstera, and you know, that's all that the Monstera really needs. And so it's been growing there for now almost 3 years. Oh, and then I also bought like a more sturdy metal trellis, the kind that you would use for like tomatoes.
Oh, okay. To help support it now that it's
to
a
help
big...
support it. Yeah.
Hmm.
And it can be kind of seen in the pictures, but it's kind of camouflaged because it's a light green color.
Clever.
And, yeah.
Do you have any other plants that you're loving these days in your collection?
The prayer plant or the Maranta.
Mm-hmm.
I posted a recent time lapse video of it opening and closing, or not opening, like going up and down for the day. Yeah, that one is one of my favorites. In fact, it is the sort of the plant on my logo, the Maranta leaf.
Right.
Yeah, and as we speak, I'm running a time lapse on it right now.
Okay, I have to ask you about these time lapses. Number one, your time lapse helped me save one of my plants. I have this like pink polka dot. I don't know the scientific name, but the pink polka dot plant.
Yeah, I know that one. Yeah.
Looks a lot like a nerve plant. I had it in my window, and I was like watering the leaves and just not knowing. I mean, I'm a novice. I'm figuring this out as I go. And I was on Instagram one day, and you have a great time-lapse video of a nerve plant that you water from the bottom, like you water the dish. And these time-lapses you do are so cool. And I saw it, and I was like, that looks so much like my polka dot plant. Why don't I try watering it like that? And I did, and I started taking before and after pictures. And because of those photos that I started taking, I started learning so much. I started learning how to take care of this plant so much better than I ever have. And now it's one of my more favorite plants to take care of because I feel like I've like bonded with it, kind of like I've had to kind like, of figure it out.
You had a learning experience with it, right?
Totally. And your time-lapse videos really shed so much light on how much plants can change and how receptive they are to how important water is. I mean, that's so obvious, but these time-lapse videos are incredible. But when I watch them, I'm like, do you just have cameras all over your apartment? Because it takes a long time to film them. So what's your process for making them? I'm so curious.
Well, it's just a like a typical DSLR type setup on a tripod, obviously. And I guess the one thing is you must have an AC adapter. There's no way your battery could last 8 hours taking photos of, you know, the same thing over and over. And even more recent DSLRs, they actually have the timer function built into the camera where you can just tell it, okay, take photos every minute, you know? And so, but I mean, for me, I use an external remote to do that.
And are you picking just like a different plant a week? Because I feel like lately you've been putting out more, right? Or maybe it's just that I'm finding them all now.
No, I think, well, here's the thing. Actually, here's a funny issue. So I had these time lapses. I've been doing them all along, right? And so they've been picked up by several very big media kind of aggregators on Facebook. Like Now This, there's an EBC in Taiwan, there's like another one from Spain. But anyway, you know, it's kind of a popular thing for them to put there because it's an interesting thing that people don't see all the time, right?
Totally.
But it's really funny to read some of the comments in there. And some people are, you know, haters are going to be haters. And they're saying like, oh, he's torturing the plants and such and such. And I mean, yes, it could be seen as that, right? But I mean, the truth is I have hundreds of plants and I can't possibly keep up with watering them all the time. So sometimes I just have to, as I survey my plants, if I notice one is wilting, then I'll be like, oh, I can run a time lapse on it because it's wilted already, right?
Yeah, and it's not like you're not feeding them on purpose and that you're going to kill them. Like, you know what you're doing. You clearly know what you're doing. Of course, like, you're going to know exactly when to make sure you rehydrate that plant.
Exactly.
So, haters going to hate.
But anyway, the purpose of the time lapse is for me to say that, you know, plants, they do things, but it's not really on the time scale that we're used to because we're used to things being in seconds and minutes, right? But plants really work in hours and days, right? So doing the time lapse kind of helps me to show like the very real response of some plants. So, like the hydrating one is sort of what you would call the torture one, right? If we want to put it that way. But there's other ones, which is that like the Marantas and the Oxalis that daily they open and close. And then the other one that people seem to like a lot are the air plants drying off, especially the Tillandsia tectorum, which is that really fuzzy one.
Fuzzy guy, yeah.
So when you dip them in water, then all the trichomes, which is those little flakes, they close along the plant because the plant's saying, okay, I got enough water, so I don't need to take any more, right? So then they become green, but as they dry off eventually, the trichomes reopen. And of course, it takes several hours for them to reopen. So when you do a time lapse of it, then you see this very long process into a short time scale that we're able to appreciate.
Do you have upcoming travel to a different country scheduled? Or maybe you have a relative or a friend who speaks a different language that you want to connect with on a deeper level? Why not easily learn a new language with my favorite language learning tool, Rosetta Stone? I recently went to Italy and I brushed up on my Italian by using the Rosetta Stone app for like 20 minutes every morning. It was so easy to use. It was part of my morning practice. It was really fun. And let me tell you, Rosetta Stone works. It brushed me up
So good. I was getting around Italy easily speaking Italian after putting those reps in. If you don't already know, Rosetta Stone is the trusted language learning tool available on desktop or as an app. Rosetta Stone has 30 years of experience, millions of users, and 25 languages offered. It makes language learning so fun, so easy, and so fast. It immerses you in the language, which is the fastest way to learn. So it's an intuitive process with no English translation, so you really learn to speak, listen, and think in the language. It even coaches you on pronunciation with its true accent feature, which is like basically having a physical trainer for your accent. It's so wild. The desktop and app options make it so easy to do consistently, and it's an amazing value. Lifetime membership has all 25 languages forever for any and all trips and language needs in your entire life. So this year I brushed up on my Italian, but next year Billy and I want to go to Japan so we could learn conversational Japanese with it. That's lifetime access to 25 language courses Rosetta Stone has to offer, and right now they're offering 50% off. It's an insane steal. So don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Growing Joy with Plants listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life, plant friends. It's an insane deal. Redeem 50% off at Rosetta, R-O-S-E-T-T-A, stone.com/today.
Do you have any places in particular? You're in Toronto, my first international guest on Bloom and Grow Radio. Very exciting. Is there any place in particular that you like to buy your plants?
Like any plant person, anytime I go out to some place that may have plants, I'm in the plant section looking at what's there, right?
Of course.
And actually, we can talk about something important here. Well, you know, I'm often asked, well, where can I get that plant? Where can I get that plant? And the thing is, plants are not, like, plants are products that are sold in stores, but they're not produced the same way as, like, let's say a pillow or a chair, right? They take time to grow. And since the nursery only has limited space, they can only dedicate that space for a particular crop of plants at a particular time. So that's why plants, the particular species of plants, will always be rotating. And I mean, maybe prior to Instagram, prior to the internet, even the crop, the particular species would just be kind of rotated, maybe according to whatever is popular in Better Homes and Gardens or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I would hope that nowadays growers are looking at Instagram because you can just look at the hashtags and know what people have and know what plants are popular. You know, case in point, Monstera, Pilea peperomioids, those kinds of plants, right?
Mm-hmm. Air plants, yeah.
Air plants. So that's the one thing to say, that I do look for plants everywhere I go, because I'll never know if I may find, for example, another type of snake plant, as you know that I collect a lot of snake plants. Sometimes I like to go in particular to a nursery, my favorite one being Valley View Gardens. There you go, Valley View Gardens.
Valley View Gardens.
Yeah. It's a very, very nice place. And one of the reasons why I love it so much is that they have a huge area inside, but it's mostly dedicated to indoor tropicals. Because, you know, garden centers can have a mix of outdoor stuff and seasonal stuff.
Yeah, a lot
stuff,
of the time,
right?
A lot of the time they don't have as many indoors.
Yeah. But for Valley View Gardens in particular, I think they also have a lot of sort of like commercial clients that need plants for offices and such. So their stock is like, they have a huge selection, and I'm not sure if the owner likes this or not, but people love to take Instagram photos in there because it's just so lush and with foliage.
Oh, I'm sure. Well, it's free marketing. I'm sure they love it.
Exactly. Yeah.
But speaking of offices, now some people like myself might assume that you do plants full time. However, you are in tech. You work a full 9-to-5 tech job and have this amazing, you know, kind of side business or side passion of plants. So is your office, do you deck your office out with plants as well?
Well, okay, yes, I am in tech, working in something completely unrelated to plants. But, as you know, because the Houseplant Journal came out of a hobby, and I just got got popular on Instagram. And so, and of course, I also talk a lot about plant care. So sometimes people assume that it just means that I've been working in it for many years. I've studied it and everything. My office, yeah, it's got a fair number of plants. I'm looking out at some of them in the kitchen now. But yeah, I wouldn't say it's like completely decked out. Otherwise, people would be wondering like, hey, are you a business analyst? I thought, or are you a gardener? You know?
Okay, so there is some sort of separation.
Yeah.
Well, then you have something to look forward to when you get home every day.
Exactly, yeah. And well, and then also every Friday on work, then at my office, for example, then I can spend some time watering the plants. And also since they're in the kitchen, then at lunchtime, I get to see them too.
Are there any other of your any other favorite plants you want to talk about?
Well, there's just so many that have different fascinating elements to them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course, air plants is kind of a favorite. You know, they're just so interesting because they're like little ornaments that you can decorate and put around your place, provided you have the right light.
And your article on air plants is so good. So concise, so informative, so helpful.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I think my main goal with writing both those blogs and eventually in the book is that, like, I want to kind of reframe, you know, everyone can talk about the different factors that influence a plant's growth, right? But I don't feel like there's a very good sense of what's important and what's secondary, or even what's connected. For me, I would say light is absolutely the most critical. However, we can't just take a sort of all or nothing approach with, oh, but I don't get any sun, because we all know that indirect light, the thing we call indirect light, is just talking about like the intensity of the photon that hits the plant. Sorry, getting science-y here, right?
But oh, yeah.
But the point is, light, I like to say that like light is basically anywhere, and if you can take a photograph without using a flash, there is some light there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to understand light intensity first, and understand it a little better, more than just, oh, is there sun or is there no sun, right? And so that's the first thing. And then the second thing is we have to understand that the water usage is directly proportional to the intensity of light. So if you have a plant that is, let's say, right up against your window versus a plant 5 feet from the window, even if they're identical plants, the one that's 5 feet away will not dry out as quickly as the one sitting right in front of the window.
Right, baking in the windowsill.
Yeah, if right. There's direct sun, but even if it was a north-facing window, it would still be the same.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, what I'm saying is, the water usage, there's many factors that dry out a plant. People talk about evaporation all the time, but the usage of water from photosynthesis is much more of an important factor than just plain evaporation. And then the last thing in terms of that, the important factors, is that, you know, we can't just assume that taking care of a plant, that all you have to do is water it, because as I've mentioned many times before, the soil in the outdoor world is full of insects and worms, and they're doing lots of like things that plants love, like aerating the soil, like providing them nutrients as they, you know, digest bacteria and stuff like that, right? So all of that action is not happening inside your houseplant soil. So the least you can do is do some aerating and kind of, you know, manage not just the moisture of the soil, but also the structure of the soil.
Well, this is a perfect section to transition into our Talking Dirty with Daryl section of the podcast.
Yes.
I would love for you to go a little bit more in depth on soils and, you know, appropriate soils for different plants. That's something that really intimidated me when I was getting started, thinking that, mm-hmm. oh my God, I have to buy different soils. This is going to become really expensive, or, oh gosh, I put this plant in the wrong soil. Is it going to die? And all that. Mm-hmm. So if you would please go a little bit farther into detail on the soils that you're using, and if you think different soils are important or if they're not, and all that good stuff.
So with soil, all there really is to know is that the soil needs to hold moisture for a certain amount of time, but then it also needs to allow water to drain away from it as it's being poured on. So that's two things. And then the last thing is it needs to be at the right looseness, but also right like pack, the compactness that will support the root health. The fourth thing is then also holding nutrients. So like the NPK, the kind of things that you see on the fertilizer packages.
Right.
So if those are the only four things, then we think about all the different types of soil that are out there and how those four things are affected by depending on, you know, what you mix in. Because we always hear about, oh, you should mix peat with some sand or some perlite, vermiculite, blah, blah, blah. But all of those are just modifying some one of those four things. Right,
those four elements.
Yeah.
Or factors.
So if we talk about water retention, this is like if we think of our pots as being like a sponge, right? If you put a dry sponge, just sit it on top of a puddle of water, it'll just soak it right up, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what I showed with the time lapse with that Fittonia, how I poured the water into the dish and all of the water was literally just sucked up in a matter of minutes. Well, it looked like a matter of seconds, but really it took a couple minutes, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that would be the water retention properties of the soil. And when we talk about the materials that go into soil that have really high water retention, something like peat or coconut husk called a coir, it's spelled C-O-I-R, and sphagnum moss. These things are basically like sponges, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where if you pour some water on it, it'll just soak right up. And if you were to touch that bit of soil, it would feel like a moist sponge. And then the next thing that I said, it was drainage, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you ever looked at some soil and you see little bits of white, almost like little white pebbles, that is perlite.
Right, the little white dots. They kind of look like styrofoam.
Yeah, well, I think what they're actually, I have Google in front of me, but I'm not going to look it up. But it's just, I think they're like expanded pieces of volcanic something. I can't remember, but it's basically something that they have to process and it turns it into a little white kind of nugget. Mm-hmm. Right now the purpose of the structure is that it's like a really rough shape, so then around it it can hold like little micro particles of water and nutrients. But because of the size of it being much bigger than like a grain of sand, for example, the water that gets poured onto it kind of has to wash over it first, right?
Yeah.
So if you can imagine, if you had just a pot full of pure perlite, it would be, it would mostly drain straight through it, right? Sand is another thing that is used for drainage. Like if you were to have a cup of sand and you pour some water in it, some of the water would stay in there, which would make the cup heavier, but then a lot of the water would just kind of drain out like the drainage holes, right? So for example, if we add perlite and sand to peat moss, which is a typical houseplant type of stuff that growers use to pot their plants, then you would get some water retaining properties from the peat moss, and then the perlite and the sand would be kind of mixed all in there to let some of the water drain through, right?
Right. The perfect combination.
Exactly. And if you were to put, let's say, more sand into it, like you would for a succulent, then there would be less space for the water retaining peat moss. And then, so the overall amount of water that can be held in this sponge, now that it's mixed up with perlite and stuff, is less, right?
Right. So it's basically about figuring out how much drainage, essentially, your soil needs, depending on what type of plant you have.
Exactly. And
succulent needing much more drainage than, you know, a pothos would. Every plant obviously needs drainage, but it's kind of getting that perfect ratio for whatever type of plant it is.
Exactly. But it's also not like a baking recipe where you put all the ingredients and then it's just done, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit more like you also need to consider where you put the plant. Like, for example, we all know that maidenhair ferns, you know, they need water like they dry out, like they use up the water very quickly if they're in the right light, right? Mm-hmm. And if they wilt too much, they'll die very quickly. Well, sorry, they won't die, though. All the foliage would die back. And then I'm saying this because it's happening to me right now, where I let the maidenhair dry out too much, but I just cut off all the foliage, like literally just chopped everything off, and a whole bunch of new fronds just started coming out.
I think the plant
knows that it's a diva, and it knows that it would need to have a good system of refoliating once it gets dried up.
The plant knows it's a diva. I love that quote.
but anyway, the point is, so a maidenhair fern would likely be potted in something that's almost 100% peat moss, mm-hmm. like the water retaining stuff, right? But if you were to mix it up with something that you would use for a succulent, it would still work, but then you would have to be watering it every day.
Right.
So it's really just a matter of kind of understanding the balance, right? And then the flip side of that would be, okay, if you were to put a succulent in something that's very water retaining, then, well, you better put it somewhere where it's going to get a lot of sun. Then it can actually use it up, right?
Right, totally.
Yeah. So we're always balancing. If it's going to be too dry, then the plant could wilt to the point where it can no longer come back, mm-hmm. right? If it's too wet, then it won't use the water fast enough. And whenever water is not used fast enough and it becomes stale, that's where bacteria that can breed, and those bacteria breed into the bacteria that kill plants by root rot.
And then another thing that you have to think about, which is something that, please correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm still figuring this out, is once it's been in the soil for a while and it's used the nutrients in the soil, you also have to think about fertilizing and, yeah. you know, replenishing those nutrients, right?
Yes, yes. So sometimes I mentioned peat moss, perlite, sand. There's one more called vermiculite, which is very similar to perlite, right. except it's a little bit more spongy, so it has a bit more water retention properties. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes people also add compost, which is literally just like decomposing stuff, right? The compost is also full of microbial life, which is the reason why it's got all the nutrients in there, right? Because it's bacteria breaking down things like dead leaves and whatnot to release all the nice good stuff for the plant, right? Now, with indoor plants, I'm not, like, I don't work in the greenhouse industry, so I don't know if sometimes for indoor plants they would omit the compost and just use straight chemical fertilizers. Whereas I think outdoor plants, it's very common to have compost mixed into the soil as well, and let that be the source of nutrients. And I mean, also, if we were going to talk about fertilizer and we talk about organic and artificial, all it really is that artificial ones are factory produced to get certain level nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium, and then a whole bunch of other trace nutrients. And they do it in the factory, and so that's why it's like in a liquid, a little pellet form, right? Mm-hmm. But organic is either derived from an organic source, such as like chicken manure sometimes is turned into little pellets, and then it has a certain amount of NPK in it as well. Or the compost one, which is having the bacteria actually actively breaking them down in order to feed your plants.
Talking science to me too with all this dirt. Talking dirty, talking science. I love it.
You hear that slurping, plant friends? That is me on my dregs of my daily dose of greens, courtesy of today's sponsor, Equilibria. Equilibria is a woman-owned wellness brand with unique science-backed products that help bring your mind and body back into harmony. I always have loved green juice and greens powders. Obviously, I love plants. I love growing plants. I love eating plants. Plants are good for you. And I have tried most greens powders brands on the market, honestly, at this point. I have to say, I'm really loving the Equilibria daily NutriGreens. I might argue it's probably one of the best tasting greens powders I've ever had, and that says a lot because I've tried most of them. The Equilibria Daily NutriGreens contains an immune antioxidant and detox blend, along with prebiotics, probiotics, and over 35 fruits and veggies. There's no way I'm eating 35 fruits and vegetables throughout the day, but I love that I'm getting little doses and the micronutrients that are in each of the different veggies and fruits, right? Plus, they're certified organic, which I love. A lot of the competitors are not. I just mix one scoop of the greens powder into my water every day, and I'm shocked at how delicious this powder tastes. It's kind of like apple juice. I started back on the greens powder bandwagon because this spring, in this like season of rejuvenation, I'm kind of rejuvenating, doing an overhaul of my health. I've returned to my workout routine. I'm getting in more sleep. I've recommitted to my morning practice, and I've made this Equilibria NutriGreens part of that morning practice, drinking the powder in water in the morning. Plus, I love a female-founded company, right? Don't we all? If you want to try this greens powder, Equilibria is hooking you up with 15% off. Head to myeq.com and use code BLOOM for 15% off Equilibria's daily NutriGreens and so many other different products on their website. That's myeq.com and use code BLOOM at checkout for 15% off site-wide today. Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test. Because, plant friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible. So I made this cutie little plant parent personality quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about five key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right houseplants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results. So one other thing I wanted to clarify for the listeners, I know that you are really big into soil aeration. I think that we notice in most of your time-lapse videos how it looks like you're kind of using a chopstick to poke the soil. So since we are talking dirty together, could you go into detail about your soil aeration kind of practice and how you learned about it and what we should actually be doing in order to not harm our plants if we want to experiment with using it?
Sure. So I think as I came from outdoor gardening, I remembered very clearly that before me and my mom would like plant, let's say, some annual plugs into the ground, that we would need to kind of till the soil a little bit to kind of loosen it up, right? And so, and you know, when soil is left untouched outside for a while, it's usually quite compacted and almost like you can, when you take a rake or something, you can just like dig it right in and then it comes out like very, very cakey almost, right? Mm-hmm. So with a houseplant, we don't have the benefit of having worms and insects burrowing and crawling around. I mean, unless you want to have them, but usually indoors, we don't have them anywhere, right?
Right.
So that's why, well, yes, but of course, our plants are used to having them around, especially in the rainforest, right?
Okay, so the bugs are naturally aerating the soil.
Exactly. So,
and of course, ideally, you don't want bugs in your houseplants. So ideally, they're not dealing with that.
Yeah. And so that's why, like, just the same way as we have to pour water into our plants because it doesn't rain inside, my philosophy is that you therefore must also control or manipulate the soil structure because you don't have insects to do it inside.
Okay.
And so I guess, you know, insects, they somewhat damage roots if they eat into them, but generally they're pretty careful going around them. Now with a chopstick, as I usually show, I just kind of poke.
Is it actually a chopstick?
It is actually a chopstick.
Okay.
Because you don't want to use something sharp because you'll just cut through a lot of roots. But
yeah.
Something too blunt and you may like squash some of the roots, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
So anyway, what I usually do is I take a chopstick and I don't know, just kind of poke around. And at the same time, I'm also feeling for how dry the soil is. Like poking around the soil, it is really like probing it to figure out how dry it is, to see if it's compacted, and also to aerate the roots to give them a little bit of space. Now, I know people talk about when you repot a plant, you're supposed to tamp out all the soil so there's no air spaces, which is true, but you still have to loosen it first before you water, and then the watering will sort of resettle the soil again. So you're not just trying to make like gaping holes in there. You're just, you know, making the holes first, and then when you water, the watering will trickle through those holes and then resettle the soil.
Okay, so the watering is going to like pull the soil back into its normal formation.
Exactly. And so I've gotten some questions. People say like, hey, my mom's been, you know, growing houseplants all these years and she's never aerated soil, but her plants are fine. Well, the thing is, when plants are growing properly with light, then their roots are strong enough to, you know, push through soil. And if you water it regularly enough, then the watering action of the water trickling through is essentially aerating.
So it's not something you need to do or your plant's going to die. It's just something that you can do to help the longevity of your plant and the like overall success of your plant's growth.
Yes. And so that's true. But quite often when somebody shows me a picture of their plant and they say that it looks like it's on the brink of death, then I tell them, oh, have you tried poking around your soil? How hard is it, right? And they'll always say, oh my gosh, it's like as hard as a rock, right? And so when the soil is compacted, then even if you were to pour lots of water on it, like if you have drainage holes, then the water is just going to seep around the sides and then go right at the bottom, right? And
right.
Therefore, there'll still be a big dry clump in the middle that's not getting any water.
Okay.
So it's sort of like a stopgap measure, and to just make sure that the soil structure stays nice and loose throughout its lifespan.
And what happens if when you're poking around in there, you like hit a root and maybe break a root?
Right. So, I mean, most plant roots, they actually grow back faster than leaves on top. Like if you were to chop off like the stem, you know, it takes some time before the stem continues to grow out of its next, you know, growing point, right?
Mm-hmm.
But roots themselves, they tend to grow back faster. Now, that doesn't excuse, like, you're not supposed to, when I do the aeration, you don't, like, go jabbing in there really violently, right?
Right.
So it's just a few pokes to get, it's almost like you're creating new water channels so that way when you water, there's a better seeping of the water through the soil.
Right. And should you be aiming to get closer to the base root kind of stalk of the plant or farther away, or pretty much just anywhere that the chopstick kind of easily glides into?
I usually tend to do it a little bit farther away, kind of like maybe, let's say if it's a single stalk in the middle, then mm-hmm. I'm going to go halfway between the edge of the pot and that stalk.
Okay, cool. So you're not getting too close.
Yeah. And also, as I wrote a couple articles about this, but there are some plants that create what are called underground rhizomes and tubers, so like they're big kind of water-filled bulbs under the soil.
Mm-hmm.
Off the top of my head, that would be like ZZ plant, spider plant also tends to have pretty thick rhizomes. For those plants, you really have to be careful not to pierce those rhizomes. Otherwise, there's a chance that they could, you know, get infected or whatnot.
So if you have one of those plants, should you not aerate because you might hit them, or just be really gentle when putting it in? And if you feel like you're hitting up against something, stop.
Yeah, I tend to do the latter. Like I still aerate.
You do still aerate. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Well, that's a fun, I think that's a fun thing for people to start experimenting with if it's something they haven't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's sort of, I often talk about how, you know, we tend to only think about the soil moisture, but we also need to consider the soil structure. And the structure deteriorates over time if you don't ever do anything about it.
Right. Yeah, and that's said perfectly. Totally.
Yeah. But I also need to add that this isn't like a replacement for repotting. Like after a year or two sometimes, then mm-hmm. you still need to repot the plant because the soil structure is not only deteriorated, but it's also depleted of nutrients most likely. So that's where you need to still repot it.
Right. And hopefully the root structure has grown and needs some more space too, right?
Yeah, true.
This is so informational. I feel like I'm going to have to re-listen to this to like let all of the information kind of digest a little bit. But I want to use this to, I want to read a quote that I found of yours that I think this, you're just so knowledgeable and you've clearly just done your research and you're so passionate about this. And someone had asked you for like tips and tricks on how to care for houseplants. And your response was, it's funny you ask for tips and tricks because I'm always trying to get people to stop thinking of houseplant care as a collection of tips and tricks, but rather a body of knowledge. And I think that's so true. I mean, you just gave us a body of knowledge on soil, and there's so much to learn, which can be very intimidating. But it's totally doable. And that leads us to talking about this book that you're working on, because I don't think there's anyone else that I want to trust besides you and making the most epic book of houseplants and houseplant care. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Yeah, it kind of all happened over this past year. And so I'm also very, very thankful for the opportunity too, because it really just kind of landed in my lap. Yeah, I think, as I mentioned, how when I used to document my things on Tumblr, like I thought, hey, this would make a nice picture kind of book, and that I would also put my own notes in there, right? Because I felt like when people see like the true progression of a plant, then that's something that they can say, hey, that means it can happen to me too, right? Whereas most plant care books, if you really just analyze what they're showing you, they show you the example plant and then they just give you some directions about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
They rarely ever tell you, okay, how many leaves should I expect to lose as this plant goes on? In fact, yeah. They do the opposite and they say, oh, if you're losing leaves, then
this
XYZ.
Is your problem. Yeah.
Exactly. And so then it kind of fosters a sense of panic whenever it happens.
I can totally relate to that.
Yeah. But that's the thing. Like if you don't know what to expect, then any sort of negative, seemingly negative experience becomes unexpected and a surprise and a critical, something critical, right?
Right. Totally.
So I kind of want to reverse that mindset of the approach to plant care, right?
You're going to teach us how to fish.
Yeah.
Instead of giving us a fish.
Exactly. I think that's the analogy. And, but then I'm also going to tell you that don't expect all your fish to be perfect. You know, they're living things. Then some will look nice for a long time and some will not, and some will grow into a shape that you're not really that pleased with. Right.
You're going to catch the fish at different parts of their life cycle. And because of that, you're going to have different experiences with them.
Exactly. Yeah. One of the concepts I bring up in the book, and which I've mentioned on Instagram as well, is called the subjective lifespan. And that basically saying that, you know, some plants, because they retain their nice looking look for a long time, then they seem to last forever. Like a Dracaena can just keep going and going taller and taller, right? And it still looks like a nice looking tree, right?
Mm-hmm.
But something like a Calathea, I always tell people this, and you know, it grows so nicely, like, you know, the foliage looks so beautiful, right? But I had this happen to one of mine. One of them in fact lasted quite a long time, but then eventually all of its foliage just started dying, right? And that's when most people would kind of just say, oh, it's dead, right? Just because 90% of its leaves are gone.
Yeah.
But then I held on to that Calathea for a long time. And that, like, even after 90% of its leaves were gone, Then I looked closely at the soil, and then I also kept the soil just kind of moist, kept it in the light that it always had before. And then eventually I saw new leaves sprouting out from the ground, right?
Oh man, so cool. Nothing better than a new leaf.
Yeah, and it made me think that, well, if I had kind of adopted the standard that, oh, I'm only going to keep this plant if it's like a nice lush bush, right? Mm-hmm. Like just like the way that when I first bought it. But, you know, plants, something that I have now come to appreciate is that they really grow into their space. So if you put it somewhere where they're getting nice, bright, indirect light, then they're going to start growing more lush, right? But if you put them a little bit of distance from the window, it's a little bit not ideal, then they kind of get leggy. And I think some people find that looks ugly, but I really think that it adds a character to the room, right?
Because you're saying a different texture.
Yeah, like the plant's kind of like saying, look, I've grown here for this many years and, you know, this is how I look because of it, right?
And you still have to love me.
Yeah. So that's kind of something that I present in the book as well, like the subjective lifespan. And also that, you know, I would hope the other thing that's challenging for the book is that I'm also providing all the photographs.
Oh, wow.
So it's meaning that you'll get plants that I've actually owned. And therefore, when I talk about them, I can tell you from experience what's happening, right?
That's awesome. So it's going to be very personal.
Yeah, exactly.
Instead of your general, you know, this is the page on pothos.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Because
that's
honestly,
very generic and very removed, I guess.
Yeah, and it's quite literally everywhere. Like, you can just Google it and you'll find some, like, hundreds of pages on pothos care, right? So, again, back to the teaching you to fish kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I think because of the way people are used to consuming the information about plant care, they're always written the same way, right? Mm-hmm. But when I write, like, my plant care section, like, that it's about that mentality when you take a step back and understand your conditions and you understand, like, the general method of what I call soil management, meaning managing the moisture and the structure.
Right.
Then when you take that approach, you can take care of any plant, just as long as you are able to adjust your care of all these things that I talked about, like the soil moisture, the soil structure, and the light. If you know how to control these things, then you can take care of any plant, right? And mm-hmm. It won't be as daunting anymore.
Which will be really mm-hmm. empowering, you know? It's empowering to be able to know how to take care of your plants and, like, a broader spectrum of just this one pothos or this one, you know, peperomia mm-hmm. or whatever the hot plant is of the week.
Yeah, you know? I think also, because you're just saying about empowering, like, I think when people ask me directly a question, quite often, all they really want to hear is whether this is normal or not, or whether I'm doing something right or wrong, right? Mm. And it's like they want to know, I want to know how to do the right thing so that if and when anything happens, such as a yellowing leaf or a brown tip, I know that it's normal and okay.
Right.
Right? That's kind of the voice I would like to the book to take on.
Totally. Instead of just, right, being like, yeah, it is normal. You're going to be fine. Let me show you how to take care of it. Mm-hmm. Instead of, like, you know, the basic kind of shame or that other books set it up to be.
Yeah, it's like, oh, if a leaf is yellowing, you're overwatering. Oh, right. if brown tip, then you need to raise the humidity. And it's like, oh, and about humidity. Honestly, I have never, ever misted a plant thinking that it would raise the humidity. I think I wrote it in probably one of the comments, and I said, if, like, trying to raise the humidity by misting a plant is like trying to warm up your room by lighting a match. It's small and it's temporary.
Right. I love it. You're giving me so many good metaphors.
So just to wrap things up now, as someone who has had much success with many plants, why would you encourage someone to have a house plant? Maybe someone that's never had one before, or someone that has one, why would you encourage them to have two, or someone who's just lost a house plant? Why do you think everyone in the world should have one?
I think it's the appreciation for a different form of life. You know, people own pets and it's very easy, or not easy, but it's like the care for them is very obvious because they're very similar. They're in the animal kingdom. They eat by chewing things in their mouth and then they grow as they age. And unfortunately, you know, they usually die before people, right? So with a plant, that kind of life form is totally different. They depend on something completely not like us. They depend on the light in order to just produce their own food. And so watching them grow and taking care of their needs is kind of like a interesting experience to see how a different life form, you know, just survives and tries its best to live.
Yeah, I love that. Expanding your mind.
Yeah.
That's funny. It's very similar to what Chris Satch from The Sill said on our second episode. And I think we're going to hear that answer over and over again, because that's what plants allow you to do. They help you kind of practice kindness and practice learning to be more understanding.
Mm-hmm. And I also had a recent, I'm not sure if this was a caption or a response that I did on Instagram, but I said that when you appreciate more than just like how a plant looks, when you start appreciating the way it grows, the way that new leaves form, and then you appreciate the way that you take care of it and realizing that, yes, you're being successful with it, then you kind of have a broader appreciation for the hobby in itself. And it's not just, it's not just superficial anymore. Like, oh, it's a nice plant. I just put it here and that's it, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Letting it be more than just furniture.
Exactly.
You know, or whatever decorative piece of the season you have.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
So do you know when the book is coming out? Is there some sort of book release plan, or should people just be following you at House Plant Journal on Instagram for future updates?
Yeah, I mean, it's still very early in the process. And in fact, I was doing a lot of back and forth with my editor to figure out like what I should say. And he said, yeah, you can tell people you're writing a book. It's okay. So, but I mean, don't tell people to pre-order it, because obviously that's not even in the works yet, right?
Got it.
So
it's something we can look forward to.
Yeah.
And until then, we'll just keep looking at all of your beautiful photos on Instagram and learning from all of the comments that you're always posting, all of the time-lapse videos, all of your blog posts. Please check Daryl out at Houseplant Journal on Instagram. On Twitter, Houseplant Journal, JRNL. Mm-hmm. And your blog is www.houseplantjournal.com, right?
Yep.
That's what I thought. His blog posts are truly incredible. If you have questions, he really outlines his air plants took it home today for me. I was reading that air plant article. Is really helpful. So
I'm glad.
Daryl, thanks so much for being on the show. I so appreciate you, and can't wait to get to the point that I can pre-order the book and be one of the first people to buy it.
Awesome. Yeah, I really appreciate it, Maria.
And now, as promised, Daryl's other special talent that we also happen to share on a song that is oh so appropriate for the end of this long plant chat. Keep blooming and keep growing, everyone.
Lord, I was born a rambling man, trying to make a living and doing the best I can. When it's time for leaving, I hope you'll understand. I was born a rambling man.
Thanks again for having a listen today. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to Bloom and Grow Radio on iTunes and leave us a review. If you want to follow the Bloom and Grow journey and are interested in more plant tips, give us a follow on Instagram at Bloom and Grow Radio and visit www.bloomandgrowradio.com to join the email list. And please let me know what you want to hear in the future episodes. I'm here to help you keep blooming and keep growing.
Bloom and Grow Radio.
Make new plant friends, propagate knowledge, and grow some freaking joy. That's the motto of the Growing Joy Garden Society app and platform, otherwise known as the plantiest and kindest corner of the internet. If you've been an OG listener or a longtime listener, you might also know this app and platform as the Bloom and Grow Garden Party, but with the rebrand, we've rebranded it to the Growing Joy Garden Society. No trolls allowed, kind plant friends only. And if you haven't heard about the society yet, Plant Friend, you got to join. It's my online community that you can access via iOS or Android app or on your computer that I built to connect our international community of plant friends so we can all nerd out together about plants and celebrate our passion for our beloved plant babies. We have members literally all over the world. I'm so in love with this community of sweet plant friends. I can't say enough amazing things about them. But also, there's a lot of really cool features about the app you might be interested in. There's dedicated hashtags to all sorts of different subsects of planty passions like houseplants, gardening, plant-inspired DIY projects, growing joy, plants and pets, and so many more. There's a plantrepreneur group, so if you're a planty entrepreneur and you want to connect with other planty entrepreneurs, you can join that group to connect and network. There's a plant swap section. Plus, the entire app, and this is my favorite part, is entirely searchable. So say you want to learn more about Hoya, you type the word Hoya into the search bar, and literally every post ever created about Hoya will pop up so you can click in, see what other people have been posting about Hoya and learn on your own and crowdsource hair information. It's so cool. But last but not least, it's an amazing way to support the show. Your monthly membership not only goes to sustaining the platform, but it also supports my team of editors, writers, and a community manager that help the world of Bloom and Grow keep growing. So come join us. All you got to do is go to jointhegardensociety.com and sign up for the community plan. Once again, you go to jointhegardensociety.com and click the community plan. Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test, because Plant Friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible, so I made this cutie little Plant Parent Personality Quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about 5 key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right houseplants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results.